Welcome to Acorn to Oak with Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy. Within each acorn, there is the DNA that strives to be a mighty oak tree. All it needs to reach its potential for greatness is to be activated. You are the acorn. On this show, we will share with you the tools and guidance you need to grow into the person you are meant to be. And now your host, Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy.
Hi guys, it's Penny, and I hope you're doing well this evening or this afternoon. And I'll just hand over to Matthew so he can say hi, and we'll take it from there.
Good evening, everybody. I hope everybody's well. Really looking forward to the show. Don't know about America, but it's been particularly cold today in the UK, so glad to be wrapped up in the warm this evening.
Actually, I was talking to Chris before we came on air, and he was saying it's about minus 10 there in Fahrenheit, wherever he is in the United States. And I thought, whew, I thought we were cold, but that takes
yeah,
the biscuit.
I take it all back. It appears we're still having summer in England.
But it's raining as always.
Yes.
So it was really quite interesting this week. I wrote the copy for the this week's show, which is around bullying and et cetera, et cetera. And it wasn't until I had actually written it and our admin lady, Emma, very kindly reminded me that it was anti-bullying week this week. So it's in full flow, apparently, anti-bullying. And it was just, obviously, I was picking up on the energy of it or whatever it was. But it was incredibly appropriate because earlier on in the week, I had a situation. I was taking my 2.5-year-old swimming. And, you know, which is great. And we had a great time swimming. And there is a school swimming session afterwards in the public pools that I was using. And it was very noisy and lots of people, lots of, I think they were probably 10 to 11 year olds getting ready for swimming and pushing and shoving, the usual general high spirits of kids going somewhere. And my 2.5-year-old got caught up in some of this, which was, you know, distracting him from the fact that we were going to go and get changed and leave soon. And he obviously got a bit disorientated and was basically looking for me. And I was obviously saying his name, not yelling his name, but saying his name, Hector, where are you? And he was looking under some of the cubicle doors because he could hear me, but he couldn't see me. And these three youngsters turned round, and one of them turned round and said, oh, you know, this is to my 2.5-year-old son. Oh, look at that pervert. I was flabbergasted. I was going, these are 10 and 11-year-olds. Saying to a 2.5-year-old that he's a pervert. And I was really quite incensed by the whole situation that had gone on. And just looked at them and turned around and said, you know, that's not helpful. Maybe if you helped him look for his mama who he has lost, that would have been more appropriate. And they, honestly, I mean, I just took one look at them, and I'm not a small lady. I stood really strong, and, you know, I didn't want to say too much to them, but basically just wanted to let them know that, one, how a 10 or 11-year-old even knew the word, yet let alone what it involved, but actually a little bit of compassion and a little bit of, oh, have you lost your mum, can I help you find her, would have been more appropriate. So this is when Matthew and I started discussing this earlier on in the week, that, you know, sometimes the language that children seem to think is appropriate and they can just blurt out at any given time without engaging their brain is astonishing. And so when we started, Matthew and I started talking about bullying and inappropriate language and how children can be so spiteful to other children, we thought it was definitely something that we would like to discuss on the radio show. So, Matthew, I've blurted out as usual.
Okay. Yeah, the thing for me that really shocked me is, I think when Penny told me that, it was kind of, I said back, I guess it takes you back to your own childhood, and I think back to when I was a child, and in fear of sounding very old at the moment, it is that looking at the new generations coming up and their behaviours, because back in our day, of course, there was bullying going on, but not to the extent that there seems to be these days. And the behaviour of the sort of the 10s, the 12s, the teens are coming out with at the moment really is, as an adult, really quite shocking, because you think, where are they learning this behaviour from? Where are they learning that actually this is appropriate? And I remember back to my childhood, we always had the, and it wasn't a fear. I think there's been a lot of rules changed around discipline, and that smacking your child is not healthy. And I can only talk from my own personal experience, but I think to a certain extent, actually, it can be appropriate. It takes me back to the days of when me and my brother would be playing UFC in the living room. And when you've got two teenage boys going at each other like there's no tomorrow, and not listening to you, certain discipline, like a we used to call it a clip round the ear, or a smack, is appropriate, because as an adult, you only have so many options, and obviously the your preference would be not to have any discipline at all. But looking at how children behave now compared to how they behaved when I was younger and discipline existed was completely different. As I said to Penny, if I was one of those 10-year-olds, you'd see that 2.5-year-old and automatically, oh, they've lost their mum, let's try and help them. Whereas now the kids, they're almost so detached from social situations or humanity, I'm not sure which one it is, but it's this, we can go anywhere and we can do anything and we can say anything to anybody and there's nothing any of you lot can do about it. I remember one of my friends coming back from school and saying that in one of their lessons, their child was talking about another child and turned around to the teacher and said, oh, well, you can't do anything, because if you do, I'll tell my mum. And it's this sort of almost like a generation where we've missed discipline and we're now seeing the signs of what that is. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying we should go back to disciplining kids. I think it can be done in a non-physical way. However, I'm just stating that actually in my life, I can see how it made a constructive difference. And it wasn't abuse and it wasn't beating. But actually, it was. If you take a naughty child like I was and you tell me 5 times not to do something and I continue to do it, regardless of what you say, it's like there has to be another step. And if a kid thinks he can get away with saying and doing anything, they will. And that's the sort of the point that I shared with Penny, is it's kind of like, is that how lost kids are today? Because their behaviours are only showing you what's going on inside for them. So if they feel it's appropriate to abuse other children, whether it be verbally or physically, it's because they've been shown that's okay. Whether that be from older members of their family, parents, or whatever it be. It's where they've seen an example of something playing out and thought, oh, well, I can do that. And kids, you can kind of let it off a little bit. They're still learning. They're very much sponges, and they're only taking on what they see. But when you take, when you expand it and actually look at how most adults treat each other, the amount of adult bullying that's going on in today's society and still going on. Because what shocks me is it comes out to the public that these things are happening, and then it just seems like over the years they get swept under the carpet. And I think that's probably why generation to generation, when we have new issues and don't know quite how to deal with them, because it's because of the teachings we've been teaching them before, so to speak. So it's learning that middle ground of how can we effectively change the problem. It's all very well talking about it, but what's a constructive way of actually making a difference?
And it's also, you know, coming up with a game plan or an action plan of how to educate our children slightly better than they seem to be educating at the moment. And you know, it is really, as I said, I was very shocked at that type of behaviour, and actually had a quiet word with the teacher, and basically, you know, it's a public pool, so you know, we've got all sorts of people. You know, I'd just been to a mother and toddler group for swimming. But you also have older people there, you have all sorts of people there, and it was just a lack of supervision of them being in the changing rooms. I mean, they basically, at the pools there, they say that the school kids will use the communal changing rooms. Well, none of them were. And they weren't only using the single changing rooms, but they were leaving their clothes and their gear in it. So in fact, it took me ages to find a changing room where I could take Hector so I could get him changed out of his swimming gear. So it was, you know, I look at things like this and I just went, you know, it was an incident pit waiting to happen. Too many kids getting excited and thinking they could mouth off with no consequence. And it's, you know, it wasn't difficult for me to protect Hector. You know, obviously I took him away from the situation and I made sure that he was happy, and obviously getting him warm because he was quite cold after the swim. But I just, you know, it's one of those things that comes back at you and you just think, hang on a minute. You know, there was a child who was verbally attacked and I'm his mum. My job is to protect myself. And therefore need to make sure that that type of situation doesn't happen again. And you look at it and just go, well, do I take him swimming again? Or do I not take him swimming again? And you suddenly realise that if you allow the thought form to continue to go around your mind, you actually reduce what you're going to do. Because you think, well, I won't take him there again. Whereas, in fact, he loves swimming. So, of course, I'll take him again. But I'll just make sure that we're out of the pool before the school kids hit the changing rooms. And so, but that is a very, very small example. And I don't want to make it bigger than it is. But what is amazing is, I think, you know, the technology that kids are exposed to now, you know, they're all on the internet, they're all, you know, watching all sorts of different things on the TV, the language and the behaviour of actors has no consequence. And it just depends what they're allowing, you know, some of this, stuff that they're watching is not necessarily a healthy example of good behavior. It's not a healthy example of moral conduct. It's not a healthy example of how people show compassion and empathy. And, you know, it's making sure that the kids grow up in a happy environment so that they don't feel that they need to take out their issues on other people. And this is one of the things, you know, obviously at Acorn to Oak, that we're very, very aware of teaching children emotional intelligence as soon as we possibly can, so that they can acknowledge how they feel without acting it out or taking it out on other people, and especially on other children. You know, it's I'm a big strong lady and I can look after myself, but when they're taking it out on people of their own age, or in fact younger children, it's just not okay behavior. So again, allowing Matthew to put this two penny worth in.
Yeah, and I think social, we're just going into a break, so I'll start that after the break.
Conscious connection to a more mindful world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
We are talking about your life. Ever wonder, is this as good as it gets? No, it could be so much better. At Acorn to Oak, we know you are seeking more happiness, joy, unconditional love, financial freedom, passion, and purpose. Find your unique mojo and live an extraordinary life. Want to know more? Contact us at our website, acorntooak.org.uk.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. 1 in 3. That means it could be you, your football buddy. Your football buddy. Or you, your best man. Your worst man. You, your dog walker. Your cat jogger. While 1 in 3 adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Matthew, are you there?
Hello, welcome back everybody. Just following on from that, I think obviously there's a lot of social media or a lot of online stuff that we didn't have as children. If you wanted to meet your mates after school, by Jove, you had to be there at 5 o'clock, otherwise by 5:10 your mates already would have gone. Life was very much simpler. We didn't have the social media side of things, and I think it detaches you from the real world. You get, obviously, we all know you get a lot of bullying online and a lot of trolling and things like that. And that is, people only say that online. If they were face to face with that person, they wouldn't say half of the things they say. A, because they wouldn't have the courage to say it to somebody's face, because they actually realise how hurtful it's being. And you can't communicate that language to another human being face to face without picking up the emotional and so actually some of the damage you're doing. And I think this is why a lot of kids do bully. If you wake up in the morning and you have parents that wish you good morning and tell you they love you and are helping you get ready for school, and there's a healthy relationship there, then you can go to school very happy and get on with everybody. If you've woken up in the morning and you've been told to get out of bed and you're being ordered around and shouted at and being called all sorts of names, which unfortunately adults take a lot of our emotional stuff out on children, and you can see it out in public. It's supermarkets in England is the perfect place to see that kind of behaviour, because you'll have mothers absolutely and fathers absolutely losing it at their kids, because right in that moment they can't handle what's going on, and the kid asks them a question and they completely unload on the kid. So when you have these children that don't have the best mornings, they're waking up to sort of parents that can be abusive and that sort of thing, and then they go to school and their way of making themselves feel better about being bullied at home is to then bully somebody else, because then they're not the bottom of the food chain. And I say this from experience, because I was that person. I was bullied, but also I was the bully. There were some things that I said to kids at school that I wish I could take back. And fortunately enough, we've seen each other in an adult life and sort of say, I can't believe we said that sort of stuff to each other. And it's not making it all right, but it's sort of saying we were kids, we didn't know any better. However, we wouldn't say that as adults. And I think that's sort of like almost like a big difference between children today, is that they are allowed to get away with so much that actually they see anything as acceptable.
I agree. I think it can be really quite difficult, because I've got a 2.5-year-old, and he can push your buttons, and he can be pretty full on. And you know, it takes somebody. And I've done 30-odd years not only of emotional intelligence for myself, but also teaching emotional intelligence. And it takes a very strong person not to get dragged by some of the behaviour of a 2.5-year-old. Bless them. You know, they're learning their boundaries, and they're learning how to be in the world. And, to consistently say no with grace and charm and as much empathy as you can, but to consistently say no to somebody who repeats and repeats and repeats and repeats the same request is tough. It is tough. And I understand how people can just go, for heaven's sake, for a quiet life, just give the child what they want. But what we're not getting is that is not helpful behavior, because you are their pole star. You are, as far as a child is concerned, the parents are mother, father, God. They have the omnipresence and the power in their lives. And if you don't take that seriously as a parent, you can make the child confused and slightly frightened and scared when boundaries do come down. So without strong and finite boundaries, you know, children can run amok. And it, you know, it leads to growing selfish and self-absorbed adults. And it's a real difficult thing. And, you know, it's great that the anti-bullying week is in full flow, because, you know, these things need to be talked about and hashed out. And, you know, adults now, as I said, can be quite scared of how a child is going to react in any one situation. And they don't, you know, they don't want their child or their teenager to be acting out in front of other people, because they then think it's a stain on their own parenting. And, you know, nobody gives us a degree in parenting. No one gives us a degree in childcare. You know, an awful lot of us, you know, basically make it up as we go along. You know, I was in an incredibly lucky situation. You know, I trained as a registered sick children's nurse at Great Ormond Street Hospital for Sick Children. I have an MA in child psychology. But I tell you what, none of that prepares you to be a parent. You know, none of it. Because, you know, what actually helped me and prepared me for being hopefully a good parent is, you know, the work that I've done on, you know, within my inner self, on myself, is, you know, healing an awful lot of the stuff that was going on for me and my issues in childhood, but also emotional intelligence, and realizing that actually to step away and take a breath is the best possible action you can take when you're actually dealing with children. You know, one of the things I did on Wednesday was step away from the three, you know, 10 or 11 year olds, take a breath and go, well, you know, he's looking for his mum. He, you know, he was obviously looking for my mum. He wasn't crying because he's not a crier. But he was obviously searching for me and trying to find me. And I was trying to find, you know, my remit at that moment was trying to find a cubicle that I could take him into to get him changed. And it's really interesting how we become, you know, society. It was interesting what you were saying earlier on, Matthew, about, you know, we've divorced ourselves from ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, in this technology crazy world, you know, we're distracting ourselves with all sorts of different things and not centering within our authentic self. And if they could put themselves, you know, if those kids, and this is what I was trying to say to them, is, you know, if you remember back to when you were lost, how did you feel? And actually getting them to go back to, you know, whenever you have, you know, your parents aren't around and you can't find them, how does that make you feel? If nothing else, it makes you feel unsettled and, you know, worried that you're not going to, you know, meet up with them again. And everybody's had those experiences, and it's just trying to get the kids to have a little bit more empathy to, you know, for everybody. You know, one of the things that I was brought up on was, there but the grace of God go I. You know, you don't know what someone's going through unless you've walked a mile in their shoes. You know, it's really important to bring some of this emotional intelligence into schools and into everyday life, so people can actually start talking about how they feel and what makes them feel unsafe, what makes them feel insecure, what is it that's going on in their life that makes them feel so downtrodden in a way that they think it's okay to take it out on somebody else.
Yeah, very much so. And I think what it brings up for me is it's all around education. We have so much education, and 99.9% of all the education taught in schools is around mind, around the mind, around intelligence, around a certain subject. We don't have emotional-based training. And when you think about where, or when I ask myself the question, what would I prefer to have learnt at school? Would I have preferred to learn all about history and RE and all the subjects we did? I mean, don't get me wrong, I think the fundamental subjects are real important. So languages, sciences, the sort of the basics are really important. But actually, when you look at what does every parent want for their child? They want them ultimately to be happy. It doesn't matter to you if they're rich, if they're poor, as long as they're happy, that's all we want for them. Yet we're not teaching our kids how to obtain that. Because the only way to obtain true happiness is to be connected with your emotions, to understand your emotions, and to be able to deal with difficult situations when they do come up. So as Penny was saying, when someone does throw an insult out there, rather than just blowing up in a reaction because you don't know how to emotionally cope with it, it's taking a breath and working through the reaction and then responding from a healthy place. And if we all did that, well, we'd have peace on earth. And it is that simple. When you look at tribes from sort of Africa, we're bombarded in the UK with adverts around giving £2 a month to a child that can't be fed in Africa. And when you watch a lot of the sort of nature programs on third world countries and stuff, yes, they do have major issues. There's huge famine and homelessness and a lot of disease. But actually, when you look at the children playing, they're happier than most children. If you looked at the playground in your around your local area, the kids are probably having a lot less fun than they are in a third world country. They're very simple, and they don't have the stresses and the pressures that our children have just because of the society they're growing up in and not having any understanding. And it may sound silly, but actually when you think about it, it can actually be quite serious. But the amount we lie to our children and we think it's okay. And you may think it's silly when I mention the Tooth Fairy or Santa Claus or some of the other stories which we tell our children and convince them that they're true. And then in later life, then tell them, actually, no, it's not true. It's just something for children. It's in some ways we're being irresponsible with what we're telling children is true, because children are growing up thinking something's true and people that love and care for them are telling them the truth, and then they find out it's not true. And it's not about the Tooth Fairy and it's not about Santa Claus, but it's about the fact that they've been lied to, and adults have always told them that that's not right and you don't do it, yet all of the adults are doing it. So the kids are growing up thinking, well, we can't do it, but the adults can do it. Well, yeah, how's that fair? So they almost rebel against it, sort of thing.
Yeah, it's the incongruency of things, I think. And, you know, when we teach a child that incongruency is acceptable, we're not teaching them to really get in touch with their authentic self and realise that their authentic self is going to know the truth, whether they're not hearing it or not. And it is when you see kids, you know, and they suddenly realise that one of their heroes, and we have to remember as parents, we are our children's heroes. And gradually, as they see the incongruencies with somebody's behavior and what they're telling us and how they're acting, and how they are in the world, and do they, you know, and this is one that I must admit I was very, very guilty of, you know, maybe swearing at the driver that pulls out in front of them or calling them a bad name. You know, I've been known to do that on occasions. It's, you know, a child picks up on that and just goes, why is my hero or heroine acting this way? This is not who I would like them to be. And it's really important that, you know, we realise that even our behaviour, because you know, you would say that swearing at somebody or telling them they're a, you know, that their parents aren't married when they pull out in front of you, or if they're driving too slowly or whatever, all of this goes into the child's mind and the child's energy field. And when we talk about, you know, an energy field is full, chocker full of situations that, you know, when a child sees something that's incongruent, it just confuses them. Yeah, and if they see it on a daily basis, then, you know, they think that they can do that behaviour also. And, you know, they start telling, you know, white lies, or they start, you know, manipulating the truth slightly, or they start manipulating others in their life, so that they can, if they misbehave, i.e. will I get that chocolate, will I get that sweet? If, you know, one of the things, as I was saying earlier on with Hector, if he repeats the same thing time and time again, will he actually wear me down and get what he, for, you know, he desperately wants? And when I say desperately wants, it's not an authentic need, you know. Obviously, for me, you know, as a parent, I will, you know, very much provide his authentic needs. If it's a want, then he'll have to wait until it's convenient for me to give it to him. So, no, I don't respond to wants. So we're coming up for another break, and we'll continue the discussion after the break.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers and researchers, pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
We are talking about your life. Ever wonder, is this as good as it gets? No, it could be so much better. At Acorn to Oak, we know you are seeking more happiness, joy, unconditional love, financial freedom, passion, and purpose. Find your unique mojo and live an extraordinary life. Want to know more? Contact us at our website, acorntooak.org.uk.
Long ago, you wouldn't think of galloping on a horse while doing calligraphy, and you wouldn't have attempted to ride your bike while typing a letter. Yet you think you can safely operate a multi-ton vehicle while texting? Behind the wheel is no place to multitask. If you want to BRB, drive now and text later. Lives depend on it.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hi, we're back. So we're talking about bullying and bullying this week. You know, one of the things that's really important and one of the things I wanted to say in this section is very much, you know, if you have suffered from bullying, if you are still suffering from bullying, if there's something going on in your life that is not how you would like it to be, you know, the most important advice I can give is to seek help. You know, find help, whether that be professional help, whether that be a friend, whether that be a parent that you can talk to. But please, you know, reach out and get some help. Get a friendly person who can help you move through, if nothing else, just to talk about it. And, you know, if you need to talk to a teacher or you need to talk to somebody in more authority, then do so. If not, reach out to us, Acorn to Oak, and talk about it. It's really important that you feel that you can be secure enough and safe enough to live the life that you choose. And, you know, I just wanted to mention that before, as we go on. Because, again, as I said, without strong and finite boundaries, you know, people get lost and they lose their way and they just feel helpless and hopeless and they just don't think they can make any changes in order to make it better. And, you know, it leads to selfish, self-serving behaviour, you know, in adults that, you know, have no idea what empathy or kindness or true happiness it really is. And, you know, having spent 30-odd years perfecting my art of happiness, I highly suggest that you take the chance and you make the commitment to seek happiness for yourself in whatever form it comes in. So again, handing over to Matthew so he can add his thoughts to this.
Yeah, very much. For me, it's that don't suffer in silence. Don't be a statistic. Take it from someone that was bullied, and as I said, I bullied others. It's not like I'm 100% innocent here, but it is that be careful of the words you use and sort of treat each other kindly, but also treat yourself kindly. Don't allow people to make you feel this way. Having worked in the construction industry for many, many years, one thing that I found, especially towards the end, was that construction, there's so many guys within construction that are only surviving mentally because of being in construction. Now, by that I mean on a healthy construction site, you'll have guys that we'll josh and we'll have a little bit of mucking around and mickey taking, which is perfectly acceptable, and it gets most guys through the day on a construction site, having a laugh, being able to forget what's going on and just have a laugh with the lads. But if one guy steps out of line and an insult comes out, everybody's on the same page and it's a case of, mate, that's not acceptable. That was a direct insult and that behaviour is not acceptable. And I think when you have that healthy boundary within a social situation or a work situation, people feel as though they can stand up and actually say, you know what, I feel as though I'm being bullied. But it's when people feel as though they can't, like very much, I know when teachers said at school, if someone's bullying you, come and speak to us. And even if you were being bullied, you wouldn't want to go and tell the teacher because you were worried of the consequences, or what if someone found out that you had been to tell a teacher that you were being bullied, because that's actually quite embarrassing. And it's that sort of don't buy into that. It's as Penny said, gain the help, because there is a lot of very good help out there. And it's don't suffer in silence. Very much like I said, I'm glad I found breath work, because it was some of the abuse and bullying that I sort of received as a child which led my behaviours to be unhealthy in my late teens and early 20s. And by the time I got a grip on it, it was at a stage where I wasn't sure whether I wanted to be here, and life had to dramatically change, or I could only see it going one way. And obviously found breath work and Acorn to Oak and did a lot of deep work, and you realise how some of our behaviours that we're doing today are because of a root issue 30 years ago. And I would say to anybody that's going through that at the moment, don't wait as long as I waited. Don't feel as though you can't speak up. You're just as important as everybody else, and you deserve to be treated that way. And I think it is real important, because it's where it all starts. If we can teach children young where we've gone wrong, and I think a lot of this is based around that, as adults, us turning around and saying, do you know what? We've got a lot of stuff wrong. We accept a lot of the systems that we've put in place and some of the education and just some of the stuff we're telling our children. We've got it wrong. And we need to just say we've got it wrong and make a change, rather than sweeping it under the carpet and sort of not doing anything about it, because nobody wants to admit they were wrong in the first place.
Yeah, and it builds into a mountain the size of Everest.
Yeah, yeah, it really does.
It is really difficult, I think, you know, having a situation in my life earlier on in my life, and it took me 15 years to break the silence. And I think when you feel that you're going to be judged, or you're going to be bullied some more, or someone is going to take their love away from you, if you do break the silence, this is it. And I think, you know, when bullying happens, you feel so small and so helpless and hopeless, as I was saying earlier on. And you know, having the guts, or having the wherewithal to break the silence and go, you know, this doesn't feel good to me. You know, there's ways of doing it without needing to lose your rag, lose your temper, get pissed off or around it. It's just actually saying, you know, I've had enough of this. This is just not acceptable to me anymore. And it is very, very, very difficult, I think. But also so important to, I mean, and the amazing thing is most kids know that there's child line. There's all sorts of different ways of getting in touch with somebody who will listen and who will help. But it's also really important to know that, you know, there's parenting groups out there. You know, there's times where, you know, even I have looked at my 2.5-year-old son and think, yeah, I'm just about to drop kick him out the window here. You know, the behaviour is so, you know, 2-year-olds can do that to you.
Yeah.
they can make you want to, you know, scream blue murder. and it's at that time where you just need to, as I said, take a breath, step away, you know, leave them safe in a room and take 5 minutes out and realize that, yeah, in giving yourself that space, in giving yourself that time, you can go back and re-engage in a totally different space than you were in before. And, you know, one of the things for me is, you know, obviously when I use that technique, I always go back in and, you know, if I've said something that was a bit dodgy or mummy was getting a little bit upset or she was angry about that, then I apologise straight away to the child, to my child, and say, that was not very good, you know. And I'll have a hug and a cuddle or whatever it is. It hasn't happened very often. The amount of times that, you know, I can hold up my hand to. But then, as I said, I've had a lot of different training and a lot of emotional and intelligence training. And if you haven't had that, I look at people and I just go, whoa. You know, and I have one son. There are many people who have four or five kids, and I just look at them and think, what they need is a hero badge.
Yeah.
I look at them and I go, you know, it's real easy to judge, you know. Obviously, I hang out in soft play areas nowadays because I've got a son at this age. And you see maybe somebody sitting or a mum sitting down there and texting a friend or having a conversation on the phone, and their kids are in soft play. And I look at that and I go, it's real easy to judge that they're not actually with their children. But then you look at it and go, they're safe, the children are happy, they're running around, they're getting exercise. And, you know, each parent sometimes needs 5 minutes. And I send them as much loving energy as I possibly can. And I go, there but the grace of God. Go I. You know? There but the grace of God, you know, is me, you know, turning to alcohol at night. I don't drink, but you can understand sometimes, you know, I fancied a gin and tonic every now and again over the last 2.5 years. But you just look at it and go, sometimes you just need to take some time for yourself as an adult. But that also means that you need to take responsibility to create as much happiness in your own life so that you can show by example, because children do learn by example. So anything else you wanted to add to that, Matthew?
Yeah, I think it goes back to something great. He's off planet now, but Dr. Sean Stevenson said to us on a talk last year was a lot of parents would say they would die for their children, but it's like, live for your children. It's like, be that good example. And very much as Penny used the phrase to drop kick the baby out the window. I've been in that situation. I've been in the situation where I'm so consumed by my own emotions, the child then relying on me for what they need. At the time, I just couldn't handle it. And you can either choose option A, which is to blow up at the child, which is what most people do because we don't know what else to do. Option two, which is what I would always do, is taking a breath, making sure that that child is safe where they are for the next 2 minutes while I go out the room and just take a few breaths and deal with my stuff. And this is the really important thing. It's my stuff. It's not the child. So why would I take it out on them? And it's that take yourself away for a couple of minutes, get yourself emotionally balanced, and then re-engage with that child. And not only are you helping yourself because you're learning how to cope with your emotions and your children better, but you're showing them the example. Because the child will see that you're getting slightly upset or angry or frustrated. Children are sponges. So they will see it. They will pick it up. And for them to notice that actually you've gone through a reaction, and it is that showing by example. They may not understand that's what you're doing, but they'll see that's what you're doing. And therefore, that will help them gauge how you're acting. And that was a real important one for me to learn, that leave a child when it's not screaming. Children have two cries, two or three. And it's not engaging when they're just grizzling, but it's actually engaging when they genuinely need that attention.
I think it's real important. Again, everybody finds their own way as a parent. And, you know, we're not here as judge and jury over that whatsoever. No. We're just, you know, everybody muddles through the best they can. And it's, you know, for me, it's very much saying to people that, you know, if you invest in yourself, then you can invest in your children.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's giving them as much honesty and self-worth as you possibly can. And hopefully that rubs off and they can give their self-worth to other people by being empathetic and kind and in true happiness. Anyway, I hope you have a great week, and hopefully the weather will improve on both sides of the Atlantic. Take care.
Thanks for listening. Speak to you next week.